listening to the Department.
By killing the jet, you become a hero in the Muslim world.
Well, thanks for tuning in. This is Matt Santos of the Mile High Show. You are listening to episode number 43, and this week I sat down with a friend of mine and a local journalist and broadcaster here in the Prescott area, Mr. Bill Monroe. He is the senior news correspondent for Arizona's Hometown Radio Group, a group of radio stations in the Prescott area. They actually cover a good chunk of the state up this way. I get a chance to work with Bill on a fairly regular basis with the talk show that I host occasionally on KQ&A, Talk of the Quad Cities, 1130 AM and 99.9 FM. But they are also home to KPPV, which is the adult contemporary top 40 station, KDDL, which is the classic country station in the area, Jack FM, a new station for them, fairly new, couple of years old, which is a great mix of a really eclectic mix of different styles of music, as well as Juan 107.1 FM, a Spanish language station up here, and the travel radio station 102.5, which is an informational station for folks from all over the world that travel the northern part of the state near the Grand Canyon. And of course, like I said, KQ&A, the Talk of the Quad Cities, which I call home every few weeks. And Bill sits in there and makes sure that the sound comes through and makes sure I behave myself in that recording booth. So thank you, Bill, for keeping me in line. And thanks for sitting down and talking to me today. All information about Bill's stations, the entire group, is available at azhometownradio.com, where there are links to the individual stations as well. And check them out. There's a great group of folks that work there that I have the privilege of working with periodically and have done so for the entire time. Basically, I've been living in Arizona. Again, azhometownradio.com. We sat down to record this week at Cupper's Coffee Bistro in Prescott, right near the Gateway Mall there on Lee Boulevard. A great spot. That was the first time I had been in there. Really great spot for coffee. They had some great food. We had some soup while we were sitting there, so you're going to hear us slurping and chomping. But, you know, well, that's what happens in a conversation among friends. Check them out at CuppersBistro.com. They were very kind to us there, letting us take up space while we recorded. They have two locations, the one there by Gateway Mall on Lee Boulevard, as well as right downtown Prescott on South Cortez Street, 226 South Cortez. Check them out, CuppersBistro.com. Open every day, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. All right, well, listen in as we talk to Bill. Hear his story, hear some some accounts of some of the news he's covered in the Prescott area and how he got started. I hope you enjoy it. Like I say, this show is just a recorded conversation amongst friends. That's what I try and do, and I hope that comes through, especially here with Bill Monroe of Arizona's Hometown Radio Group. Thanks for listening. So I was talking to this guy the other day, and tell him I was trying to set up an interview with a newsman from Baghdad, and he got all excited. He forgot there's a Baghdad, Arizona. So I got a couple of years on you, I think. What was your graduating class? 89. Yeah, I was 84.
Oh wow.
Did you grow up your entire life in Baghdad?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
What was it? What's the population there? About,
I'd say maybe about 3,000-4,000.
Has it been like that? Is that a pretty constant population?
Well, it depends on what's going on with the mine. You know, it's there's layoffs and things like that. It drops. If copper's good, it goes up.
But I mean, it's never been town.
It probably got as high as maybe 5,000, maybe
really?
5,000 or 6,000, maybe.
And what was your folks in the mining?
Oh yeah, my dad was a miner for 28 years, and my mom was a mother.
Yeah, that's a straight company town, right?
Oh yeah, it is, absolutely. It is. If you are not a teacher or a miner, or if you work at the store, then you better find work elsewhere.
The company store. I've been through there a couple of times.
You can't go through Baghdad. Let me correct you on that. You can't go through Baghdad. It's impossible.
Is it a dead end?
It is a dead end.
I've been to Baghdad.
Highway 96 is the end of the road ways than one.
What's the little diner? It's like a 50s style?
On Main Street, yeah. The diner on Main Street is actually pretty good. I went
really
there
good
one
breakfast.
Time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But I did work at the store. It's actually a Bash's. So
it's still a Bash's?
Still a Bash's.
I thought they closed
they did not. No.
They did the one here down the
right,
street.
Right, exactly. Yeah, they closed one here, but they kept their lease there. I guess business is good. So
yeah. Is everything there owned by the mine?
Pretty much.
Homes and everything?
Oh, yeah. You can't buy land in Baghdad. If you want to settle in Baghdad, forget it. You're out of luck.
Yeah, mine or nothing, huh?
Right. My parents had bought a double wide. In case we had to move, because I was back in the layoffs, and they got a little worried that we were going to have to pull up stakes. So we bought a house. So it was ours, but I mean the land that it was on was not. Yeah, it sat on company land, exactly. Yeah.
What was it like growing up there as a kid?
It was good. It was really good. I mean, I knew all my neighbors, friendly people, you know, up and down the street. I don't know my neighbors now for nothing, but I knew everybody.
Are you in Prescott or Prescott Valley?
Prescott Valley. I'm in Prescott Valley, yeah. But, I mean, I knew everybody, and there was kids my age, and it was great, you know. And so we moved. We lived in this little trailer park called Sycamore, which was outside of town, basically. It's probably about 3-4 miles out of town. And when I started going to kindergarten, they said, hey, we need to move a little more into town. And so we moved almost across the street from the school. And so that was new housing. And then all of a sudden, this other new housing opened up, and we're like, we're moving again. It's like, what? So we moved there, and that was actually on the outskirts of town. So we had actually walked to school like 3 miles. So I don't exaggerate when I said I walked both ways to school in the snow, you know, whatever. Yeah. And then when I got to high school, we actually, like I said, bought this double wide, and I stayed there till I moved out.
The Sultans,
The
right?
Sultans, yeah. The mighty Sultans were actually number 3 in the division, actually, state champions.
Football, yes.
Yeah,
they took championship, what, 2 years?
Last year. Last year they took it, and they actually had their first loss in like a year and a half, I believe, to Pima. And so now they're third, I guess, number three. So,
but what's your family like? Brothers, sisters?
Good. I have one of each. One brother that's younger than I am. We're 11 months apart, so I guess we're Irish twins. Yeah. That's what I hear. And then my sister's 4 years younger than I am, so she lives.
Oh, you're the oldest?
I'm the oldest, believe it or not. But she lives in Phoenix. And my brother's here in Prescott. Excuse me, Valley too.
Oh, nice, nice.
Yep. So
What was it? I mean, you knew your neighbors, really small town.
It was very small, and you know, so that's, in a way, it's a good thing, it's a bad thing. If I got in trouble, I knew I was already busted by the time I got home, you know, because my mom had so many friends. And
did that happen a lot?
It happened a lot, yeah.
Like, oh, what?
We had a,
what was little Billy into when he was a kid?
I wasn't really a bad kid, but we had this mountain that's called, just simply called, the Mesa, and a lot of people like to go hunting and hiking up there. And me and a group of friends, like Saturday, we were bored, so let's go hike the Mesa. But we wouldn't tell anybody. So we just leave. And one of them, I don't know who it was to this day, but one of the mothers would always end up calling the sheriff. So that's who the jurisdiction is. Yabba County Sheriff's Office. Somebody would always call the deputy, and sure enough, come back down the mountain about 4 hours later, here's a deputy car with the lights on, and we just came walking down like nothing. It's like, okay, they're safe, you know, but it's just one of the paranoid mothers. It wasn't my mother. I knew that. So
now it was one specific deputy that was based out of there, wasn't it?
They usually had one, yeah. And now I think they've expanded. Well, it might have been the same back then, but it's like the Congress and Yarnell area. Well,
for a long time, wasn't it one guy, one specific guy?
Yeah.
Was and it Despain?
Sid Despain, yes. He was the late, great Sid Despain. He was actually the grandfather of a friend of mine. And he was legendary, man. He was great. And I remember we had this really tiny building that's actually a museum now. But it was on, like, one of the main drags there. And I remember when I was a kid one time, this he was trying to get the attention of this car. And everybody was stopped in traffic. And so he sees the car, and so he runs out of the office, and he's trying to get this guy's attention. He's yelling, hey, hey, and the guy doesn't know. So he actually pulls his keys out, and he throws them at the back of the guy's truck to make him stop.
He could have taken a shot.
Yeah, he could, yeah, exactly. He should have fired at him. But when I was there, there was about three deputies, I think, two or three. Or maybe there was two, and they changed.
Did a rotation.
But, yeah, they did rotation. But, yeah, there was at least a couple when I was growing up there. And it's really easy to get in trouble, like I said. You're driving down the road, and they were looking for any excuse, it seemed like, sometimes, yeah. You know. Taillights out, you know, whatever, you know. So.
Now, you went back recently. I saw some comments and some posts on your social media and that. You went back for homecoming recently?
I did.
How was that?
That was great. Like I said, we won the game, and it was really depressing because when I was in high school, we'd always lose the game. And we'd lose by a lot. Like 44 points or something. It's like halftime, they're calling the game. It's like, hey, good night, everybody, you know. But it's nice to go back and see some folks. And what they did was they tied into this reunion they do now for all the classes so everybody can come.
Oh,
so
nice.
You're not necessarily seeing
so
just your class.
So school-wide.
Exactly. So they bring out all the old-timers and everything. And so it's good to see some faces. And a lot of them are actually still there, you know.
Yeah.
But now they're getting older, so a lot of them are retiring now, you know. So.
That's nice. That's new. I was at that championship game, that football game. Was it last year?
Yes, it was. Yeah, last year. Yeah, it was last year.
The one in Phoenix?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. When they won, a friend of mine, mutual friend, you know Mark Garcia, he's with Chino PD. He was up in the stands. He had been working at the mine. He had taken some time off and was working there for a while in security. And I got to talking with him either just before the game or halftime. I don't remember. And he's looking around. He goes, they basically closed town. Because everybody in town is here.
Exactly.
The stadium was packed.
Yeah.
It was full. And I thought he was joking. He goes, no, this is pretty much everybody in town is here now. Did that obviously they were winning. They were on a good run. They still are on football. Mm-hmm. But was that kind of town pride? Was that really
absolutely
manifest when you
absolutely
were there?
They they've always had pride in their sports, you know, and they love their football, and they love their basketball and volleyball. So most of the people that have kids there, they end up in sports. And I remember one time there was a kid that graduated the year before I did. He actually went on to NAU to play. And same deal, the whole town shows up for that game. You know, I remember they even announced our town. And I remember, I for some reason, I had gotten up from my seat, and I was actually walking on the way down. So I didn't really know where everybody from the town was sitting. And I had friends up in NAU. That's why I went. And then all of a sudden, I hear from Baghdad, Arizona. And then everybody just cheered, and I raised my arm, and it was kind of cool. So, yeah, they have a lot of pride in their sports, you know, especially football,
Nice.
It seems like. Yeah.
I came from what was considered a small town. in California, about 150,000, 155,000. And it was nothing like that. And that, for my area, that was small. And compared to 5,000, it's unreal. When I moved out here first, I was living in Paulden, and that was a big culture shock. Right. I think it was like 3,800 at the time when I moved out there.
Wow.
And now I'm in the big city, Chino Valley.
Exactly.
We got 10,000.
Yep, that's it. Yeah, so everybody says, oh, this is the big city to you. I said, well, it is, actually.
Yeah,
Safeway, exactly. And Jay Leno was just there, so.
Yeah, that's right. He was shopping in Safeway.
But it's good. You know, I grew up with people that I'm still friends with to this day, you know, and, like, you kind of lose that if you're in a bigger school, you know. And my graduating class was 43.
Oh, wow.
You know, yeah.
That's actually, for a town that size, that's pretty good. So there's a lot of younger ones there?
Yeah, you know what, but it seems like the classes are actually smaller now for some reason. It seems like, yeah.
A lot of small towns like that. It's typically an older population.
Right, exactly.
So that seems right, because I think I was, well, my school was a little different. Where I was at, in that small, 150,000, there was like five or six high schools.
Right.
Each little neighborhood had its own. My graduating class, I want to say, was, I don't remember. It might have been 250, 300,
oh, wow.
I don't remember. Yeah. And that was small. We were one of the smaller schools in the area. Mm-hmm. But you had to see a graduating class of 40, 45, something like that, 50, that seems...
Right.
Because I counted, I like being able to kind of hide when I was...
Yeah, exactly. But it's kind of funny because they always publish, you know, the schools that graduate every year, and Baghdad's like always one line. It seems like one or two lines, you know. So it just depends. Like, so you got a lot of new families in there. I didn't realize it when I was growing up, but it's very transitional.
I was just going to ask that. Is a lot moving in and out?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you have a... buddy, and then all of a sudden he's gone. You know, it's like, where'd he go? And you know, as kids, you don't really understand. It's
almost like military,
pretty
like
much.
A military,
yeah, it is. You know, and you don't realize that dad's not working anymore, or mom's not working anymore, got laid off, or he got fired, or whatever. You know,
needed a whim for how the economy is.
Exactly, and that's what I'm saying. Is like, you don't really have any. You know, if you're not working for the mine, there's no incentive to stay around, so you have to up and move. You know,
how did Baghdad fare in recent years with the economy switching the way it has?
It went really well for a while. Like I was saying, when I went back for my 20th high school reunion, which was in 2008, it was actually so busy that they had to build new housing, and then all of a sudden the economy tanked again, and they were stuck with these new houses. They didn't really know what to do with, and they had to, like, I think, lay off the contractors and everything.
Yeesh.
Yeah, and it was pretty bad, but then they got them all filled now, and they're back. But I had heard copper has been down, and they're going through that.
I was going to ask, what is the mine? Is it copper?
It's copper, and there's this stuff called moly, and it's another
drug.
it's another metal that they can use for. Yeah, they can use, and I guess that's really what's been keeping them afloat more is the moly more than the copper.
What's the, and I'm asking you stuff. I don't know if you know. I'm just interested.
Yeah.
What is the basic use for copper? What is that mainly used?
It's usually for wiring, mainly. It used to be for pennies. That was the big thing when you
pennies,
were growing up. You
and
probably
then
remember
pipes and things.
Exactly.
But they're not really using that much anymore.
Well, they're using it still for pipes, you know, and it, overseas especially.
Oh,
there's
okay.
a big foreign market for that, and you know, that's why you always hear about these thefts of copper because it's big, still big business, you know. But right now they're going through a layoff. They're actually doing kind of like a volunteer thing. They're going back through and, you know, seeing if they can retire people early. I know
early
one guy, right,
stuff.
That they offered it to him. He's been there for like 30 years, and they offered it to him. He's taking it in November, so he'll be gone. But it's like every time I go there, it's like, yo, I see one of those old-timers. They're like, oh, I'm retiring, you know, finally. But
one of my neighbors works in Baghdad. He stays whatever his work days are out on a trailer there and then comes home for, I don't know what their shift's
exactly.
like.
Yep.
His kids go to school with my son. And I was talking to him. I guess their target is like a 10% reduction.
Something like that, yeah.
In workforce,
right.
Which is 100 people?
I would say maybe 100. Yeah, that'd probably
about
be
about 1,000
I would say about 1,000 people. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. A third of the town is employed by the mine, and I'm guessing probably another third are supported by store, restaurants,
exactly.
stuff like
yeah,
that.
Exactly right, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So if that mine, or in any small industry town like that, and there's a lot of those in the state, primarily mining. I know down southern Arizona it's the same.
Right.
In anything like that, when one industry takes a hit, that can theoretically wipe out an entire town.
Oh, absolutely. Again, yeah, jeez. Right. Like I said, we went through the 1984 shutdown, and we didn't know what we were going to do. We were going to move to Flagstaff. My dad actually had gotten a degree. He went back to NAU. and got his degree in accounting just for something to be back on. But the sad part is that a lot of kids don't know anything besides this life. Yeah. So if they came up here, they wouldn't really know, I don't think, what to do, how to fill out a job application. I knew a lot of kids that came up here for school or whatever, and they end up going right back because it's in their blood.
I can imagine, too, if, say, a family with, you know, preteen and teenage kids is uprooted and has to go from a 3,000, 4,000 population town like Baghdad, or there's, you know, some of the ones down south. Jobs are open in Phoenix, Tucson.
Exactly. Yeah.
If they've got to uproot and you've got a kid who's, I'm just kind of running this through my head, you got a 13, 14-year-old kid going from that smack dab in the middle of Phoenix.
Right. Exactly right.
Yep. I see trouble,
oh,
man.
Yeah,
I know.
Absolutely.
It's a little different getting in some mischief, getting into some shenanigans when you're a kid in a small town and the sheriff go, hey, go on home.
Exactly.
And then all of a sudden you're living on, you know, Indian school.
Right.
And 17,
that's
and now
it.
The trouble
that's
is
exactly
a lot
right. You
worse.
Got it.
Yeah.
There's more opportunities for trouble. You
so
know?
you were able to survive and end up
I
in
survived.
The big city of
yes,
Prescott.
Yes, I did good. I survived without getting in any trouble. Like I said, just minor stuff. Like I said, the sheriff looking for us on the Mesa, but
and
that was about it.
That's more of a welfare check kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, well, make sure they're safe.
Right,
kind
exactly
of thing.
Right, yeah.
Yeah,
so.
I didn't have that kind of trouble when I was a kid. I had the cops trouble when I was a kid. A little different.
So it was a shock. A lot of people come up here, so I run into people from time to time because, like I said, a lot of them live here. After they retire, they get another job, they come here. It was a real culture shock, you know, coming up, growing up, because it's like my parents live here now in Prescott Valley, and they're kind of like, they were surprised at first that, hey, wait, stores are open past 7, you know. We have options. We can go out and eat if we want because, you know, it's like everything closes. They roll up the roads, you know, but it's good to go back. I mean, I'm glad I grew up there, but I'm glad I got out because like I said, I knew mining wasn't for me. I mean, it paid the bills and it got me braces and paid for my college education, but, you know, it was still good to.
What did your dad do?
He was a mill mechanic, which basically he worked on all the heavy trucks. Have you ever seen the trucks? They have huge,
huge.
Yes. You got to just see them at least once. It's great. We get people that want to take a tour of the mine.
The
exactly.
tires are like bigger than the building.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. That's all they want to do is every time we get tourists, they want to get their picture taken with the big truck. You know, they want to get stand by the tire because it's so, like you said, so huge. So, like I said, it was good for him, and he did his thing, but I knew right off the bat, that's not.
Now, were you a news junkie as a kid? Why broadcasting, or did you want to get into the music end
I always
of it?
Wanted to write, and what had happened was, in fifth grade, I had a teacher who kind of, she wanted me to write more, you know, like stories and things. She says, you have a gift for writing, and so she always had me write stories and things like that. This is Mrs. Comstock.
Comstock?
Very
Thank
legendary.
You, Mrs. Comstock.
Thank you, Mrs. Comstock. She was around for years, and I actually ran into her a couple of years ago, and she's still kicking in Phoenix. And I guess she recently retired, but I think she went up to the city, and she taught. And like I said, retiring now, but anyways, after that, when I got to high school, I wrote for the school paper and became editor of that, and then never thought I'd get in this business at all, you know. It's just like it was something I wanted to do, but I just thought it's not gonna happen, you know. And then
why
got the call, I don't know, I just thought, you know, it's like you dream about it and then all of a sudden it's like dreams are shot down sometimes.
Now, had you thought about print journalism or
kind of, yeah, that's why I thought it would be a transition yourself. But I just didn't know how to take that next step. What had happened was when I got up here, I was taking classes at Yavapai, but they weren't really journalism based. I mean, they were more like basic classes. And so as I was getting ready to graduate, they had this notice that they were going to start up a college paper. What had happened was a very tumultuous time at Yavapai College. That's where I went to school. And this lady who actually ended up being the editor of the paper when I was there, she had done this little underground thing. And it was really quiet and nobody really knew what was going
like
on.
Like an underground publication?
Underground. It was actually called The Underground. And it was a paper and it was just criticizing the, you know, the president. Cause
when you say tumultuous, why? What was some of the stuff going on?
I just had heard, I can't really speak of anything specific, but it was, I heard there was like a lot of behind the scenes stuff. And, you know, being a student there, I wasn't really engaged in government, so I didn't really know what was going on. But I know they wanted him out of there, and they did when Doreen Daley took over in 93, and that was when I was leaving, like I said. And so what happened was they started putting up flyers saying, hey, we're going to start this newspaper, And we had some meetings, a little core group of us, and we met every month. And I was just telling someone the other day that what happened was the dean, he was more interested in costs. He didn't want to get the paper off the ground. He was like, okay, well, here's some sheets, and he'd have graphs and things like that. He's like, we could probably get this up next year. And they were looking at everybody going, like, next year, we want it out now. So what had happened was when April rolled around of that year, we decided we're going to put a paper out without the dean's approval. We were just going to, like, we got to pull the trigger on this thing or it's not going to happen. So sure enough, the paper came out, and he saw me, said, hey, nice paper. And I said, yeah, but he had no idea it was coming. He was expecting a, like, next August start, but we had to get going. So we went at that. I wrote for him for a year, actually, after I graduated. I kind of did, like, a guest columnist type thing, and finally I said, I have to go. And then I ended up getting the job at the radio station in 93, in October, and the rest is history, as they say. So.
Now, Prescott Valley Broadcast.
Arizona's hometown radio group. Yeah. You know,
rail them off.
KPPV, KQ&A.
KPPV is more the top
106.7, the mix, yes, adult contemporary type. And KQ&A is our talk radio station, and you've been on there before. We talk of the town. Yeah. We have local talk and national talk. And then KDDL is our classic country station, 94.3, 103.1, our home of the Arizona Cardinals now. And we actually have some stations outside the area. I mean, you can get KPPV in Flagstaff, 100.7 FM. And then KQ&A also comes in on 99.9 FM. And then we also have KPKR, which is in the Parker area, Riverette Radio. And then we just recently launched, well, it's been a couple of years now, but Jack FM, 94.3.
Great mix of music on there.
Yep, 94.7, I'm sorry. And 94.3 is KDDL, 94.7 is Jack. And then on May, Cinco de Mayo, actually, how fitting, we launched Juan. Juan is our Spanish station.
Juan's following me on Twitter.
Is he? But we get a lot of good positive input over that. A lot of people seem to like it. They like the mix. I just talked to a guy from Baghdad that I know who actually just moved up here, but he loves it. He thinks it's great. So, and then KUGO is our Grand Canyon station, which basically it's not a music station at all. It basically tells, right, it's
like
travel
that.
Advisory. So basically if you tune in right when you go into the canyon, it'll tell you, hey, here's what's going on this weekend. And we actually broadcast in different languages as well.
I was just going to say that. You probably got a huge mix of people from all over the world tuning into that just for the info.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. So you want to know what's going on. I believe we have the billboard at the entrance way. Tune into KUGO, and then, like I said, it'll let you know what's going on. But all day, they run little features about the canyon and, you know, what's going on in the area, like I said. So,
now, when you were writing, both in high school and then at Yavapai, clink it away, it doesn't matter. Chew away. Nobody listens to this anyway, so it's okay. But I get as many listens as this as I do on KQ&A. So. when you were writing through high school, and then once you got to Yavapai and started getting some stuff in print, was there anything specific that you gravitated to? Was it, you know, sports, humor, features, hard news?
It kind of seemed like they wanted me in high school to gravitate towards sports. They were kind of looking for a guy, and I actually wrote for some other town papers after I'd graduated, but it seemed like they always wanted me to do sports, and I didn't really know too much about sports. I had even commentated high school games. I had no idea what was going on. I looked at the guy next to me, the late great Don Linger, and I'd say, what's going on? He would tell me, and I'd just get on the mic and I'd say it. The only thing I knew was touchdown, basically, or field goal.
Unfortunately,
and he's going
you were
touchdown.
Broadcasting a baseball game.
Yeah, exactly. I was on the baseball field, like, touchdown. They're like, so basically, they wanted me to write up these sports reports, and then when I got to college, I did more feature typewriting, which I liked. I did this thing at the time we were celebrating our 25th anniversary, and the college is now up at more than 40.
Yeah.
You know, but at that point, so I would basically interview people from the past, find a teacher that had been there for, you know, since the beginning. And so it was kind of cool. Say, tell us a little memory you have, maybe sad, maybe funny. So I got some pretty good stories out of that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was really cool. So.
And then how did you hook up with the radio station?
What happened was they were looking for an intern. They had called the newspaper office asking, because we were just barely launching KQ&A, so we're kind of a package deal, me and KQ&A.
Yeah.
You know, we had just launched KQ&A. They were looking to expand their local news on that station. And so they called and said, we're looking for an intern. And
cheap labor.
Right, exactly. And so
No, we don't.
Whoops. No comment. But anyways, they called the editor. The editor gave him my name because I was pretty much the only news guy. And so they said, hey, they want to talk to you.
Had you already graduated at
right,
that
at that point?
So
exactly. Yeah,
then they don't have to worry about your class
right,
schedule
right,
and
right,
stuff
exactly.
Like that.
So, yeah. So I went and did the interview with this lady, and she's kind of explaining to me, the news director at the time, and she's explaining, here's what you have to cover, and I still have the sheet, actually, of what she wrote down for me, the city council meetings and the board of supervisors of Yavapai County and all this. And so so I said, okay. And so, like I said, that was in October of 93, and so I started covering the beat around here, if you will, and 22 years later, I'm still covering the beat. So
now, I was really impressed with this area moving out here from a larger metro area, the San Francisco Bay Area, not knowing anything about the Prescott area or Arizona for that matter, other than driven through Phoenix and Tucson a couple times years ago. But when I moved up here and started exploring the area, which is 11 years ago now, 2004, I was blown away at a couple of things. The talent of folks out here, specifically in the arts and music scene. There are musicians here that you can pop into at an open mic, a lot of them who I've interviewed on this show, that would be headlining musicians in the Bay Area.
Right.
Packing out clubs.
Yep.
And they're playing, you know, for tips where you could walk in and listen to them work out some new material and things in a bar.
Yeah.
You know, just a couple weeks ago, I had a buddy of mine in town that when we bumped into you on the row.
Yes.
And they were visiting, him and his wife were visiting from California. And he was just, but they listened to and go and experience a lot of live music in the Bay Area. And he was just blown away at what we were seeing just going from door to door to door down Whiskey Row.
Right.
And I was blown away with that. And then when you get into the visual arts, the sculptors, painters, and all the talent that kind of gravitates to this area, I was completely impressed. One of the things that I've also seen from that, covering, because I cover smaller town politics, Chino Valley Council and mayor's office and things, and have done some stuff on the county level. It's kind of the same thing with newsmakers and policymakers and politicians. You'll have retired folks who move out here and decide to get active. And some of these folks are very high-end, highly trained from the corporate America or from, you know, academics, have served on boards of universities and stuff. And now they're sitting on town councils for a couple hundred bucks a month.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You look at their resumes, and like I said, they're very impressive, very lengthy, you know.
Who are some of the characters that you've ran across in your 20-plus years covering politics?
I've ran into quite a few characters. I'll just say that, like, when I started, it was a very different venue, like, with the Prescott Valley and between the Prescott and Prescott Valley town councils. I mean, city council and town council, where city council seemed like were very, you know, proper. They would wear their suits and ties, except for Dayton Rutkowski, who would wear his Hawaiian shirt, but... when I went to Prescott Valley, they were kind of laid back. You know, they're wearing shorts. They're wearing shorts. And just the mayor and the vice mayor used to always wear shorts all the time. That's what I remember. And I'm like, is this a council meeting? You know, it just seemed very strange. But one of the more colorful characters was Sam Steiger, the late, great Sam Steiger, who served as mayor of Prescott for a couple of years. He was great. I mean,
now, when did he pass away?
He passed away, oh, good Lord. I want to say maybe.
Was it a long time ago?
No,
or just
it was
a few
recently.
Years
maybe
ago.
I'd say like 5 years ago, I want to say. But he had served in, like, the late 90s. Like.
Was there something about... for some reason, is it a cigar?
He was the one
about
that was...
a cigar. Didn't they run a picture of him with the
big stogie? Yeah, I remember when he decided to run for mayor. Like you said, that was a classic picture of him with the big stogie just blowing smoke. Like, he doesn't really care what you think. But he was a very colorful character. I mean, he was a congressman here. And senator and... I mean, he did what he wanted. He basically, you know, the big story was that he shot at a burro on his property. And then, you know, that was one of the stories. And the other famous story was that he painted the crosswalk that's on.
Yes.
And then it ended up being named after him. But that was his claim
to
fame.
That was
one
I remember. Yeah, because I remember when he passed away, they ran a bunch of things in the Courier.
That was a big push to get those after he died. I mean, there was some councilmen that wanted it while he was alive. And it never happened. And then finally, they have a like little plaque on both sides of the sidewalk.
Yeah.
So, you know, he did things his way. And he would always call me kid, which I thought was funny. He's like, hey, thanks, kid, you know. And when I remember when they had his first meeting, it was like all these cameras, news crews came from Phoenix. I mean, you could have sold tickets to that meeting, you know. And I remember they had them all set up there, and the council chambers were packed, and they just wanted to see what he was going to say, and yeah. he didn't disappoint. I remember there was a planner, he was going through this project, and he was basically kind of like taking a long time to explain everything. And so after he was done, the mayor looks at him and says, "Can I ask you a question?" He's like, "Yeah." He goes, "Why are you wasting our time?" And everybody's eyes just kind of got all big. And the point he was trying to make was that, you know, you could just go down a straight line and make a short presentation. Yeah. But he wanted to get into all the intricacies and history of that, and he just really didn't care
for
that.
Get to the point.
Yeah, get to the point, exactly, pretty much. So, but he was a good guy. I liked Sam. Sam was cool.
Who are some of the other ones that you
have impressed you? So many.
Or unimpressed you.
Unimpressed me. I don't know if I should name names, but there's been a few that, you know, you get good ones, you get bad ones, and then some... I'll just say there was one superintendent, I won't say where, but it was in the area, and she had basically got into dire straits financially with the district, and so we have this meeting, and she was basically, it was around 2001, so she was basing this failure on 9/11. Well, 9/11 had just happened, so there was no way they could have seen, so the train had already jumped the tracks a long time ago, but she was just trying to say, but there was some very contentious meetings there, you know, where people were wondering what was going on. She wasn't giving them the whole story, and, you know, so it was interesting for a while there. And then even when I first started on the Humboldt, covering the Humboldt board, there was a board member who was kind of in the center of the tornado there with all this controversy of stuff that was going on, basically just with meetings and things like that. And so every time I went, it was always packed just with parents, and they just, and he ended up stepping down actually, but it wasn't his fault. He just said, "I'm not gonna do this anymore," you know. So
for my $30 a month,
yeah, exactly. Actually, right. He was kind of like outvoted, basically. Yeah, he was basically outvoted. And that's what's funny is that whenever you go to these meetings and they don't know what's going on, they're like, "Cut the board's salary." It's like, well, they don't make anything, you know. They're volunteers. The council does, but
very minimal.
Exactly.
Yeah. It blows me away when people who don't really do their homework, basically, to cut to the chase.
Exactly.
They just make assumptions off of rumors they hear and things. I had somebody call me up and ask me about, because knowing I work a lot with Chino Valley, and they said, I was just having a conversation with somebody, and they mentioned the mayor makes like $250,000 a year. And I was like, what?
Yeah, exactly.
They said, we need to recall, we got to cut his pay, and da-da-da-da. I said, he makes like, it's like $200 a month.
Exactly.
It's like $2,300 a year or something.
Yep.
And they're like, what?
Yeah.
Well, what are we paying the school board? No, that's volunteer. That's exactly right. So when you, in bigger areas, people have more agendas usually as far as getting into office, and especially at different levels of government. When you're talking small town politics, for the most part, at least, the agenda is to see if they can help the area.
You got it.
Because you're not getting a whole lot of a benefit financially from serving on local.
You don't run for school board to get rich, you know. Basically, like you said, you want to help out. But I think you're right. I agree. I think a lot of people come from these larger communities, and they're under the impression that they make a ton of money. Yeah, they don't get it. They
think about that about people that are on the radio.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much. We're rolling in the dough.
Well, and let's touch on that a little bit. Not so much, you know, I don't want to see your pay stub or anything, but it's really it's labor love, pretty much. I mean, it's a way to be involved in what's going on, kind of be in the know on a lot of things.
Absolutely. I mean, I didn't know what was going on here when I first moved, and it's great to actually open the paper and say, "Oh, I was there at that meeting. I know what's going on with that." You know, it's like, what's the big deal about blank, you know? It's like, oh, well, that's why, because da-da-da, you know? So it's kind of cool.
When I first got into the business, mainly it was through photography, covering events, photojourn stuff. Whether it be a concert, a school board meeting, like you said, or like a political rally, there was a lot of that going on in the Bay Area, or, you know, anything, major news event. The main reason why I really enjoyed doing my job and still do is it was kind of like a way to look, you know, behind the curtain, so to speak.
Exactly.
You're even though you're not involved in the activity, you know, if I'm shooting a ball game, I'm obviously not a participant, but I'm backstage in the dugouts, down in the guts of the arena, whatever it happens to be.
Right.
And I always like that feeling of kind of being in the being in the background, being able to see behind that curtain.
Absolutely. We've been, you know, Diamondback sponsors since day one pretty much, so that's given me opportunities to interview some of the players go to games.
Nice.
So it's been nice. And, you know, all the concerts around, we sponsor those, so I've usually been able to go backstage and chat with people there. So
on the entertainment side, what are some of the bigger events that you've been able to witness firsthand?
Well, I don't know if it's really entertainment, it was more political, but I got to cover Governor George W. Bush's visit here in 2000
at the courthouse. Entertaining.
Yeah, it is. And that was kind of interesting because that was actually like the first major event we had here, really, political wise. And he was making a stop, like, he's the governor of Texas. He was just stumping for his campaign. But they made it really, they're real serious about it. I mean, they weren't going to mess around with someone just walking up and saying, hey. So I had to go through this whole procedure of filling out credentials.
Stuff,
and it was kind of cool because they actually took us down this aisle that was, like, kind of separated from everybody. Like, you walked down,
see,
I was like,
cool.
I was just strutting around.
Stuff.
Yeah, it was cool, yeah, because I was strutting around. And here's the crowd, and I'm just like, waving at the people, you know. And we got on this
which
podium.
You do.
And,
people
which
might
I
think
do.
You're joking, but no.
No, it's true. It's
Bill
true.
Will wave.
I will wave,
at
exactly.
Folks as he walks past them with your little princess wave.
Yep, my little princess wave. And so we got up and they put us on a podium, and we weren't too far from him. I mean, the pictures kind of show when I took pictures of my old 35mm, it looked like he's a little far away. They didn't let us get too close. I actually went after just to see if I could catch him, and I knew it wasn't really going to happen. But actually, when I got to the courthouse, he was walking out with John McCain. He kind of hosted him, I guess, and so they were going out the side door, and they were out of limo, and they were gone. So, you know, but I've covered the rallies over there every year. A lot of people may not know this, but there's a Republican Election Eve rally. It's been a tradition since Barry Goldwater announced his candidacy since '64. McCain has tried to keep the tradition up of candidates coming to the courthouse square, and like I said, he talked George Bush into coming, and so every year it seems like on election eve they have the candidates come down, and so some have been bigger than others. Like when McCain actually ran for president,
yes, I remember
that was a really big deal. He had Hank Williams Jr. here, and he actually ended up coming here on election day. It didn't, and it wasn't supposed to be that way. But what had happened was he got stuck at another stop. So basically, it's like midnight, and people were still there, you know, showing up, and the square was packed with people, and he gave his speech, and then he was off to the next stop doing the last minute thing. So it was kind of, that was really interesting for that, you know, to see all the people that came out, you know.
In recent years, shift gears a little bit, in recent years, Prescott has been in the national and international spotlight for some pretty major news events that you and your station were right there covering. How tough is that as a journalist? Now, on the print side or on the photo side, I can photograph stuff and I'm capturing images, or if I'm writing something, which I had to do on several of these, you know, you can sit and formulate your thought and put it to print and then change it and edit it, which obviously you can do with broadcast as well, but it's much more vulnerable as a broadcast journalist, whether it be television visually or you on radio, to keep your composure.
Right.
See, I'm specifically referencing like the Granite Mountain Hot Shots.
Oh, yeah. The, like I said, the RNL 19, that was very emotional for a lot of people, and people want information right away. And so that night on June 30th, 2 years ago, I got a call saying something's going on in Yarnell. You need to find out what's going on. So I go back to the station, like this is at 8 o'clock at night or whatever. And I remember they didn't know exactly how many had died. And so it was maybe like they thought 7 or something like that. And so I was giving updates, you know, kind of live on the air saying here's what we know. And so right before I left, what happened was they had scheduled a conference at like midnight. It was something strange where Chief Dan Fryo.
I was out there with Ken.
Right,
Ken
exactly,
there.
Yeah. So we were at the police department. Excuse me. And I thought, well, maybe I should check this before I go. And it was up to 20. And I was like, I just kept looking at the computer saying, is that right? That can't be right. I mean, you think when firefighters die, it's like maybe 2 or 3.
Yeah.
And it was the largest, you know, killing of firefighters in Arizona. And I just kept staring like for minutes going, this isn't right. You know, it's like, it'd be like if somebody came up to you and said, hey, 20 of your family members just died, you know. They were in an accident. All 20 are gone.
And that's kind of what it was here. I mean, you working, covering, well, the Dosey fire just, what, 2 weeks?
Exactly.
Week and a half
beforehand. Oh, yeah, right.
covering local sports stuff, covering the wildlife or wildfire expo that's on the square, or the heroes thing that they do at the Prescott Valley Event Center, formerly TIMS. I mean, you come in contact with these guys.
Exactly.
These are folks that we know by name, by face, at least enough to say hello, and on some occasions, we know them fairly close.
Right.
What was... Do you remember what was going through your head while you were broadcasting this stuff?
You know, I just tried to dial in, because basically I didn't really know him that well. I think I knew Andrew Ashcraft as a little boy, but I hadn't seen him since that time, so I didn't really know. But I've known his mom forever.
Yeah.
So they had said that you're at least 1 degree away, I had heard, from somebody. If you don't know a firefighter, you know somebody who does.
Yeah.
You know, so I knew him, and then I think I kind of remember them coming into the city council meetings. But I can't say for sure, you know, that I can't point to one and say, oh yeah, I knew that person, because I don't really remember, because there was so many fire crews going through there. But basically, so I just, you know, dialed in. But it was very emotional.
Yeah.
I mean, I can remember people, you know, commenting on the 4th of July parade, because it was that next weekend, and they were just breaking down, because they decided to make it a tribute. It was really tough for a lot of people.
And even the rodeo that was right there.
Yeah, right. Exactly. They had to totally change to make, you know, the opening of the ceremony a tribute to them, and even to this day there's still people.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've worn, you know, Yarnell 19 shirts in Phoenix and people know.
Yeah.
I've worn them in Vegas and people know. I mean, it was our, I like to liken it to our 9/11. This was our 9/11, because basically the nation on that day, you know, mourned, they came together, and this is kind of what this is for us, you
know.
And
that's the flip side to it. Obviously it was a horrible tragedy. I was in, at the time, TIMS Event Center, TIMS Toyota Center, for the memorial service.
Well, oh, yeah,
Vice
I was
President
there too,
Joe,
yeah.
Joe Biden. And I was sitting next to a Reuters photographer, and he was from France. I was sitting next to a guy from the BBC.
Yep.
It was an international story. And like I said, granted, it was horrible, but if you want to look for a silver lining, exactly what you said. It brought the community together.
Right.
The Prescott Strong concert
exactly.
that was on the
square.
One that they had it at I'm and I was slipping my name. Who was the country singer that performed at the event center?
Yes. I can't think of it either now. I don't remember.
It's
but
right on the top of my
I
head.
Just remember Alex at the Prescott Strong, but John Voight comes out, you know, and Jordan Sparks, you know, helped out. And so it's like people wanted to. There you go. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, but people wanted to see what can we do to help, basically.
And they really did. Now, there's a whole flip side of that, you know, that where did the money go? Was it used correctly? Were the families treated right?
Yeah.
That's for the politicians to decide.
Exactly.
That's for guys like me and you to report on.
Yeah.
But, you know, aside from that, just the feeling of walking down the street and feeling a connection with our neighbors.
Exactly
which,
right.
In a small town of Baghdad of 3,000 people, you have on a one-on-one basis. We don't always have it here.
No.
We don't always have it on in a bigger metro area or even a smaller area like Prescott.
Right.
And that was a way for all the entire community to kind of
pull
together.
Oh, yeah. You know, I went to Gannon Light Vigil. And what got it for me was it wasn't really emotional. Like I said, I kind of called it in. It was hard, but still, like I said, I wasn't really connected with these guys. But what really got it for me was when they had a little memorial thing at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, and when they showed the names, they actually had a name. So now you don't have 19 victims now. You have, you know, names, actual names. So, and I should read, I said that they said 20, but it was actually 18. There was 18, and they didn't know about the other one, and then 19, but then, of course, we had the survivors, so there was 20 total. But that's when it hit me, because it's like you actually have a face and a name now. You know who was involved here, you know.
Yeah. That was tough.
It was tough. And then, of course, then we made international news again this year with the Kayla Mueller thing.
Where you and I were right next to each other.
Yes, we were. And it was right back to, you know, it was like the 19 all over again. You know, people nationally coming over to cover the story, you know. And again, very sad. But the community came together again, you know. And I had just been in the studio where you do Talk of the Town, and Kayla's parents were there, and that was hard.
Yes.
I mean, I'm glad I wasn't the one doing the talking, but just rough. How do you... You know, how do the parents get over something like that, you know? So it's rough.
Switch gears again. Let's go to a little happier. Now, where I believe it's where I saw you last was when my buddies were in town. up and down Whiskey Row. Yes. You are a fixture on the entertainment scene.
I am
scene
the
as
unofficial
well.
Mayor of Whiskey Row, so I like that fun. But I like to be incognito. I don't like people
incognito.
To know.
How are you incognito in your Batman
pajamas? That's the one thing. Yeah, exactly. or my Santa suit, either one.
What were you wearing that night?
I don't remember. I don't recall.
Put it this way. It wasn't conventional journalism attire.
No, it was not. So that's kind of the good thing about radio, because people don't really know you unless they listen. And if they hear your name, they'll say, oh, yeah,
out,
yeah, yeah. Like, and that's the thing. It's like, yeah, yeah. People, hey, it's Bill from Warren. It's like, oh, you know, and then they know. Like you said, the gig is up. But with the newspaper, you know, they know because they see their pictures. And so they unless, but if you don't read the paper, you don't know who these people are. But for the most part, it seems like they get recognized more than I do. But I mean, I've been here for so long that you know, people know me. But it's
everybody
knows. Don't say anything. But there's people that they want to give you like suggestions. That's really irks me.
Like
sometimes.
What? Like what do you get?
You know, they just come in. And,
wait,
and,
have I ever given?
No. Yeah, I don't. it's not. They're not really helpful suggestions, though. So what I'm saying is, they get on some website, they hear about some controversy or conspiracy going on,
like steering you towards
a story. Exactly. And they don't say you need to look into that. I say you should. I had a guy here that would just get right in my face and say you need to do this. He's not suggesting, he's saying, he's telling me. Like, I knew nothing, you know. And but he was into this whole RNL 19, the cover-up, you know, and things like that. And he was always, like I said, he gets on these websites and he like bases it on fact. And so he's like, yeah, go on to this website. And he would draw off this web address. I'm like, whatever, you know. But he's moved to Phoenix now. So, but I did get to see him, though. He did come by a couple months ago, and he was just right back to his same old tricks. I'm like, so, you know, that kind of gets me, you know. But if they have a suggestion that's like friendly, like, oh, I hear the store's closing, that's legit. You know, that's kind of something to look into. But
as long as they're not playing program director.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I mean, I had a guy, too, that was same thing with sports. You guys should cover blah. It's like, it's tiddlywinks for crying out loud.
All right,
you know?
I gotta remember that next time I start sending out those emails at 3 in the morning going, hey, you guys know about this?
Yeah, you know about that. Yeah, well, if it's interesting, we'll take it, you know. But
hey, if I'm thinking about it at 3 in the morning, it's interesting.
It is, that's right.
So what is your what? And I was thinking about this before when I was first setting up here, and I know you've told me a million times, and I see it when I walk past your window at KQNA. Your official title?
My official title is senior news correspondent. So that's just a fancy way of saying news reporter.
You're
the
reporter. Now
I cover the beat
for everything, for all those.
Pretty much, you help me out with the Chino Valley. Yeah, but basically, we run news on KPBV and KQNA and KDDL Cattle Country, and then we do Arizona news on Parker, Arizona and California news actually. So if there's a Prescott story that's pretty big, they'll pick it up there. So we get a little coverage that way. So
what's on the horizon for Bill Monroe?
Same, just plugging away, trying to survive the year. Yeah. You know? And, you know, just doing my thing. And I got elections coming up soon, you know.
Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, you know.
What do we got locally?
Locally, there's some bond elections. The Prescott is looking at a bond and override. And for those who don't know, an override is basically it allows them to spend money on the bricks and mortar of the override. And I believe I got it right, but the bond is used for salaries, for teacher salaries, you know, because they've been through some dire straits, too, financially. The state's cut their funding, and people don't understand. And they went for one, I believe, last year, and it failed.
Yeah.
So they're back at it again trying to. And they also want to sell the historic, I believe, Washington and Miller Valley Schools buildings. So, and I mean, people have an attachment to those, but, you know. What can you do?
Very strong nostalgia and history. And this is a historic town.
Right.
It's a historic area. Mm-hmm. And these are families for generations have gone to some of these schools.
Right.
So it's
exactly.
Got that feeling. But then you got to weigh it. Is it financially responsible
exactly right.
to do so?
Exactly right. I mean, I wish they
I'm
wouldn't
glad
have. You know,
I'm glad I don't have to make those decisions.
I know. It was rough. I was there when they had to close Dexter School. You know, that was years ago. And that was rough because, like I said, they had a very a big attachment to that school as well, you know, and they had to close it for the same reason, you know, financial. But, you know, and like you had mentioned the small town thing, and I still think of Prescott as small town because, like you said, when things like this come about, you hear from the families that have been here forever. You know, they still have that attachment to when it was, you know, dirt roads pretty much, you know.
And then I'm not going to suggest you cover it because I don't want to be that guy that tells you you have to cover. But and out on the outskirts, Chino Valley next year, the mayor and all six council members are coming up for election.
Oh, we're already covered that. We're getting it. Yeah, that is very interesting. You sent me a nice Marley quote about that, and it's very interesting because, like you said, it doesn't happen very often. For those who don't know, usually they have the terms, you know, like one will run staggered. That's why the word I was looking for. Yeah, staggered. So basically, one will serve, you know, this 4-year term, and then it's like, oh wait, one will come up in 2 years before that. You know, so you'll have, like you said, staggered. So you won't. You'll have maybe two new council members. Like the city council just had election. You know, they're getting rid of two members and the mayor. So there's three gone there. You know, but like I said, that they're not losing their whole council. But yeah, basically, the reason for Chino is because they've been having all these resignations and things like that.
Well, that, and we fall, Chino falls under that new state guideline where the elections have to happen on certain times of the year. We used to be flip-flop, and Prescott bucked it because of the charter.
Yes, they did. Their grandfather didn't, right, exactly. Yeah, they really fought for that one.
Chino could not, Interesting. So what's any thoughts on Oberg? Or,
I like Harry, Oberg, actually. Harry Oberg, yeah. Harry Oberg. I like him. I don't really know him that well, but it just seems like he's ready to roll up his sleeves and get to work. I think either one of them would have done well, but, you know, Oberg won.
And he's an old-time Prescott boy. Yes, graduated Prescott High School in 1965.
Right, exactly.
I just photographed his reunion a couple of weeks ago.
Wow. So, you know, that's what I'm saying either way, because Freihoe, he was in a native Prescottonian, but like I said, being the fire chief, having to deal again with the Yarnell 19, you know, he knows the town. So, like I said, either way, it would have been fine. But I think he'll do okay. You know, and the new council members are great. Steve Sishka has been a businessman here forever. Lamerson's.
Jewelry, right?
Steve?
Yeah.
Yeah, Olson's. He does Olson's, you know.
Oh, Olson's great.
Olson's, that's right. Yeah. And
I know his name is always on the radio ads.
Yeah, right, yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, so he does Olson's. It was grain, and now it's for healthy animals now because they've kind of expanded their focus a little bit. And then Jim Lamerson, I said, has been on council forever. And Billy Orr seems like she's been with the Good Governance Committee, I believe. And Republican Women of Prescott. She's been involved. So, I mean, I think it's going to be a good council coming in. So, but we're going to miss Charlie Arnold and Chris Cookney. They've been great.
I'm pretty sure Charlie's got his eyes set farther on the horizon.
Oh, he sure
does. Won't come in. I want to get him on here one of these days.
Absolutely. So, yeah, Charlie, he hasn't really said,
you're
right.
If you're listening,
we want to know.
No, you come on the Mile High Show and we'll talk about it.
Exactly. So.
I know how print journalism has changed over the years. My first newspaper job was in 1982. Yeesh, I'm old. That's where I spent most of my professional career, was in print journalism. So I know how that's changed as technology's changed. I mean, how have you seen the shift in 20-plus years with broadcast journalism?
You know, we've really upgraded our technology. When I first started, they had these things called carts, and they look like 8-tracks, if you remember how those go. Basically, we do all our recording on those, and we'd pop them in this machine, and we had them automated to where they would play the break. So basically, a break would come up, boom, it'd click that cart machine, and we'd have to replace it in the afternoon, or sometimes when I go in on the weekend, they're like, here's some new spots, pop these in. And then we actually use reel-to-reel as well. And those are really a pain.
Were you splicing?
You know, we had to splice. And they sound awful. They sound terrible now. My dad, I remember, had a reel-to-reel machine when I was growing up, and I never thought I would be actually working with him. You know, I just something he played, you know, and he recorded and things like. It was just a toy for him, basically. But now it's like I have to actually do this to get commercials on the air. And certain stations, they didn't really adapt right away. We had already gotten the technology, and they hadn't adapted yet, so we'd still get this reel to reel, and we had to put it in this new technology. Yeah. You know, we had to really process the heck out of them, so that was kind of a pain. But when I first started, I was using cassettes. I had a microphone and a little, like, kind of like a Walkman type thing, and it was a cassette, and that's how I do all my stuff. Record, how do you feel, da da da, you know, and stop the tape. And editing was, you know, forget it. You couldn't really edit with the cassettes. And now we have this program called Cool Edit, and basically you just dump the track. I have a little, what I call the stick, and it goes into an MP3. Pop in the computer, and you can cut bits out, and, you know, you're good to go.
All your splicing and cutting and pasting is
right
there on
the
computer.
Yeah, right.
How has the way, or has it, has this changed the way you report on things as far as time? Because radio and TV always had, or, you know, in the past 60 years, has had print beat. As far as breaking stories and things,
right?
Because you could break into a broadcast with, you know,
with the breaking
Kennedy's
news,
been shot,
right?
Yeah, moon landing, whatever.
9/11, whatever. Yeah,
print would have to be the next day.
Exactly.
That's why newspapers used to have a morning and an evening edition.
Yes, yes, and that's what's changed on the print side, actually, is because it's like the Courier used to be an afternoon edition. You know, and they changed. They went to mornings. But now they're able, with the internet, they can get stories breaking,
website,
too.
Website, Twitter feed,
they can say,
all that
there's
stuff.
Been an accident in Prescott, and boom, you get on the site. It's right there. So, like I said, they'll have to wait to put it in print till the next day, but they might have it up already.
How have you guys at the radio stations adapted to that? I'm thinking your website, the way you can download right. and
exactly
some,
we
some
can,
of your syndicated yeah, shows yeah, right. are right there as podcasts.
We can break in, like you said. We still break in, you know, now get on the mic if something big happens. We can, like you said, Kennedy's been shot. We can get on the mic yeah. on all of our stations now, pretty much, and say
we did that break live in. On the air during one of mine yes. last year. Yeah, when oh Robin yeah, Williams.
Right when Robin Williams died, and then when I was down actually doing the Caleb Mueller Memorial, they had me downtown, and I called in and said, yeah. but they had broken into DJ Phone's show Q&A, and I went on live with a report right like that. So it's still pretty much the same, except we don't. You know, because if it's live, you don't have to process it, basically. So that never changed, regardless of reel-to-reel or cassette versus, you know, the cool edit program that I was talking about. You know,
now,
so.
As far as the people, the listeners get your content, that's changed, too. It doesn't have to be over the airwaves. You can, like I say, you can download things right off of your websites
right.
and things like that.
Exactly.
How has that changed at all, how you prepare Your shows, or is it kind of the same? It has, actually.
We have a big social media presence now. And so basically we have to do Twitter and Facebook and whatever else. Just like you said, it changes to where you can tell people, hey, I'm going to be on Talk of the Town today. Here's my guest. Whereas before, we just run commercials. So unless you're actually listening to the station, you might not necessarily know what's going on. But now you go on Facebook and get on our website, Arizona's Hometown Radio Group. It's right there, you know. And so that's kind of changed, like you said. And then if we're at an event, we can tell people as it's happening,
yeah,
hey, we're down at, you know, Cuppers here in Prescott, and then people can come out and to the live remote. Like I said, otherwise we run remote promos, but you wouldn't really know. Like the one we have coming up this weekend is More and More Farms. They got their big pumpkin festival, you know, that's been on.
Now that's going to run the next couple of weekends?
It's through the whole month of October, actually. It started on the 3rd, and it'll go through every weekend through Halloween. But like I said, we can go on social media and let people know here's what's going on, so they kind of have a heads up about what's going on in the weekend, and they listen to our live broadcast, and we stream, you know, that's another thing, we have to stream live now, and so they can hear it either on their computers or on the radio.
So links to either a phone app, streaming live through the computer, or downloading stuff, where's the best place to go to capture all of you? Because each station has its own site.
Exactly.
But there's links to them all through the main corporate site?
Right. I believe so, yeah.
And run them off. KQNA.com.
KQNA.com, KBV.com, CattleCountryRadio.com, and I believe the one is RiverRatRadio.com.
I'll put links to them up on there.
Yeah, and so, like I said, so we have, you know, and that's the other thing is that everybody jokes, you know, like when they give me a flyer or something, like, well, you can't run this on the radio because it's a picture. But, I mean, we actually can with the social media now. We run a lot of things, like I said. That's changed, like you said. If we're on it live remote, we can tell people we're there. But now we can actually show them that we're there. You know, we can take pictures and say, here we are. Show us how much fun we're having at these remotes. They are a lot of fun, you know.
Yeah.
But so we can get people involved. They can actually see the talent. And I'm like, oh, that's what Ken looks like or Gregory looks like or any of our talent, you know. So they can actually see the face, you know. Whereas radio, like I said, that's why I like to be incognito, because they wouldn't necessarily know me unless they go out to a remote or something like that.
Just look for the Batman.
Just look for the bat signal in the sky. That's right. That's it. So.
Anything else you want to hit?
I think that's about it. So I just want to say again, KPV just celebrated our 30th anniversary, September 1st. And so we've been on the air 30 years and still going strong. So here's the 30 more. So
good deal.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Billy.
All right. Thank you, Matt.
Shining the light and I dialed doing anything my radio advised. With every one of those late night stations playing songs bringing tears to my eyes, I was seriously thinking about hiding the receiver when the switch broke, cause it's old. They're saying things that I can hardly believe. They really think we're getting out of control. Radio is a sound salvation. They say you better listen to the voice of reason, but they don't give you any choice, cause they think that it's treason. So you had better do what you were told. You better listen to the radio. I wanna bite the hand that feeds me. I wanna bite that hand so badly. I wanna make them wish they'd never seen me. Some of my friends sit around every
every evening and they worry about the times ahead. But everybody else is overwhelmed by indifference and the promise of an early bed. You either shut up or get cut out. They don't want to hear about it. It's only inches on the reel to reel. And the radio is in the hands of such a lot of fools trying to anesthetize the way that you feel. Radio is a sound salvation. Radio is cleaning up the nation. They say you better listen to the voice of reason. But they don't give you any choice because they think that it's treason. So you had better do what you were told.